and welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. Hebrew Nation, His Kingdom, His People, and your radio station.
Good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the wise guys. Yeah, it's a wonderful day in the neighborhood. I'm looking at two great guys, Tuck, Aaron. Good morning, people. How are you?
I was wondering if you were looking at a mirror over there, too. what two are you talking about?
I ain't good looking this morning. I barely got up.
Wow. I can't comment on that.
Yeah, right. Do not say a word.
Nope.
Hey. I have something kind of fun for you guys.
Okay.
Listen to this, and you tell me who wrote this.
Okay. I did.
Okay.
Jimmy Johnson.
When each person is treated as a beloved child of God, individuals can reach their full potential, communities will flourish, and America will be a great place of even greater hope and freedom. Let me reread it again.
Okay.
When each person is treated as a beloved child of God, individuals can reach their full potential, communities will flourish, and America will be a place of even greater hope and freedom.
Well, I could take some guesses at who did not, just because of what some of the words that were used in it.
Right.
Was it a politician?
Yeah, you'd say so.
Okay. Modern day?
Modern day? Yeah, you'd say so. I like this. He's getting this like a game.
Gotta ask questions.
can I just throw it out there now?
Boo, boo, boo. Yeah.
Trump.
Yeah. Trump. President Trump.
And the only reason why I got to there was because of some key words in there.
Tell me.
China, no. because he was talking about God,
yeah,
and the importance of God, in relation to, you know, America. So that gives away, that's gonna cut down most of the world at that point when you're talking about America. The other keywords in there that could make you think it might be somebody else could be community. You know, because we had a former president who was very much in community, but wouldn't have been mentioning God so prevalently.
Yeah, he was not only prevalent, but he was the very first president in history to ever attend the March for Life.
The first
president in history.
So, not even what some people would say the most religious of, like, a modern day when these things are around, but like of George W. Bush.
Yep.
They were like giving him, you know, so much credit for his faith. He didn't?
No.
Wow.
Never attended.
So Trump's the only one.
Listen to this. This is my profound privilege to be the first president in history to attend the March for Life. And it is what motivates my actions to improve. And these are some things he did within his presidency. People forget this because I don't know about you guys, but when we started to look up wonderful things that Trump did during his presidency.
Glorious yeah, things.
Glorious. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah, all we'd find was these terrible comments about it.
Yes.
But this is a president who funded the Down syndrome research, expanded health services for single mothers, and also improved the adoption and foster care system even with greater funding.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, people don't realize the behind-the-scenes stuff that this guy did. All to protect community and freedom for people. He also signed an executive order on protecting vulnerable newborn and infant children. And what that did is that the children that were being aborted and then putting on a table that were still alive.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Right.
He put in an act that said, no, you can't just...
You can't do that.
You can't just kill them now.
Yeah.
I mean, you get out of the womb and you made it through that one and now we're going to stab you to death. You
right.
Know?
No, you can't do that.
Can't do that.
That's good. I mean, those are some good things for a horrible racist, narcissistic. What other words were the used for him?
Creep.
Creep.
He joined 32 other countries in signing the Geneva Consensus Declaration.
What was that one?
To provide better health care to women.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's supposed to be what's the word?
A misogynist.
Misogynist.
Yeah.
That hate women.
Right. I mean, he hates them so much that he's giving and making sure that they have health care. That's how much he hates women.
Yeah. And most of his employees have always been women.
Right, because he hates women so much.
The majority of...
Well, he likes looking... And they're all good-looking women. I mean, you ever think of that?
I've seen some that are not so. Yeah.
Wow. Why do we talk about stuff like this? I mean, people are probably going, don't talk politics. Well, we're not talking about politics.
We're talking about character.
Character.
Yeah. I mean, politics is it's baloney because we talk about life, and life includes politics and includes spirituality, all that stuff.
Yeah. And character matters, and this is an appointed leader of a country.
Yeah.
And so we should look at his character. Is he a good individual to be following?
His actions turned to be pretty good. I was going to ask Tuck the Torah question.
The Torah question. Oh, no.
Yeah, so what's the purpose? I mean, Deuteronomy starts off with Moses reciting these wonderful victories that Israel had done. I mean, what's the purpose of going over good things in the past? Is there any purpose to that? I mean, it seems like we just get locked into all the negative or the current. Well, you know, life's so terrible, it's so bad, but then we don't remember some things that
If you want to learn how to repeat yourself and do good things, you need to refresh your memory.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah, what's
what?
That?
Can you repeat that?
Yeah, what?
It's like if you want to remember and how to do good things, you have to remind yourself of what good things you have done.
Yeah.
And most people don't realize how many good things Mr. Trump did. And that was, you know, pretty phenomenal. Just this morning we're going over, Aaron's going over a lot of the stuff and rephrasing stuff. And, you know, it's pretty amazing.
Well, here's a question for you guys, because we always talk about Lashon Hara. And we, knowing that it's not good to do bad gossip or attack the person's character. As the news and as the Biden administration is doing everything it can to destroy an individual, do we become part of that destructive process if we remain silent when a person's character is being destroyed?
Yes, because that's what you need to... You know, make people aware of what that term means. Lashon Hara is Hebrew for evil speech, evil tongue. And so you are speaking ill of another person. It's one thing if they're there face to face and you're saying these things to their face.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Tuck, I got something to bring.
I know. I've been waiting for that. But it's, you know, we have to, if you're going to speak ill of somebody or speak the truth of somebody, you better be face-to-face with them and not talking about them. Because when you gossip about somebody, that's what evil speech is, because you're not allowing them to rebut. You're not allowing them to tell you the truth from their perspective.
Aaron, what do you think?
Well, I'm right there with Tuck on that one. I mean, I brought it up in the past, I think on this show, that... you know, I was accused of something, you know, at a local level group that I was in, and I was found guilty of the accusation.
Uh-oh.
And I actually didn't do it. I know all the scenarios of it. But they never came to me and asked me. They just decided on their own, nope, he's guilty. We'll just get rid of him.
Wow.
It's like, wow, really? That's the kind of people you're going to be. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I've not shared that story around town because it's not worth my time to. But if anybody were to come to me and say, hey, what do you think about so-and-so? I'm like, well, I don't have any respect for him for this reason, you know. And it's going to be a bad light on them when somebody's asking me about that individual's character.
Is it?
Because they don't care about somebody else's character. They only care about themselves and what they can make up, right?
It's easier, I think, sometimes to go around about the scene. I mean, like Tuck was saying, most people are afraid to speak one-on-one with a person.
Yeah.
So if you can go ahead and go around their back,
mm-hmm.
you can start the process.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it'd be...
MSNBC, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, MSNBC.
CNN.
What's interesting...
NBC.
Yes.
ABC, CBS.
I'm sorry, I'll stop Fox.
Yes. Let's take an example of speaking face-to-face, because many times people say, well, we hate Trump because he was so mean. He would call out people.
Yeah.
Okay? And he'd say, what, fake media or
mm-hmm.
swamp or
mm-hmm.
call them, you know, the names. We're finding out that some of those names are pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
or pretty true.
Yeah, pretty true. Like, you know, what? 87,000 new tax IRS agents coming out that need to be armed.
Armed,
ready
yeah.
to use a gun.
Yeah. Why do you, if you're going to do a tax audit, why do you need a gun?
I know, right?
I'm not sure on that one.
Raid people's homes. Yeah, that's, but look at this. I mean, okay. Guess who writes this, Tuck?
Well, it looks like from the book you're reading.
Oh, stop. Okay, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from men. You do not enter yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you devour widows' houses. Even well, for a pretense, you make long prayers, therefore you shall receive greater condemnation. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, because you travel about on sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he becomes one, you make him twice as much of a son of hell as you are. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, that's nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he's obligated. You fools, you blind men, which is more important, the gold or the temple?
That was Trump's ancestor, King.
He called him hypocrites. He called them whitewashed tombs.
That would be Yeshua.
Wow. So Yeshua.
That was a mean tweet.
Was that face to face?
Yeah. I'm sure some of those people were there in their midst.
Oh yeah, it says he pulls them right up. They were questioning him in front of the multitude. He turns around and nails them. Isn't it interesting, you know, that they, too, decided that this guy was too much of a loose cannon.
And CNN canceled Yeshua as well.
Yeah. Got to kill him. Got to put him under. I'm not saying Trump's the Messiah.
No.
No. But my word, it's...
But there are some parallels in... things that they did.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
Anyone that speaks against an establishment is typically not good.
Yeah.
Well, not good from whose perspective?
Right? Well, good point. Yeah. Good point.
From the establishment's perspective.
Yeah, because it's from the point of view of truth-telling, Trump was mighty, mighty good.
So for fun, let's just look at some things.
Okay.
Let's just put up some reminders, because we know that even in Scripture, Moses and the patriarchs said, put up the altars where God did something great.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
and
because...
Let's remember it.
Right, and because they were smart enough to know that hey, we're fickle people, and we're going to forget all the good things.
So what topic do you want to take? I'm going to take the environment on Trump. What do you want to take?
Okay, well, what I'm looking at right now is economic boom.
Okay.
And let me rephrase that. Unprecedented economic boom.
Boom. We forget it. You know, it's only been, what, 18 to 20 months?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
The destructive mode?
The destructive mode and self-destruct.
Let's take something that's really good and just kind of just kill it.
That's the alarm I've been going off in my head. It's the self-destruct alarm. That's what's going on.
That's amazing, though. We are 30 months into Biden.
Is that what it is now?
Yeah, wow. It's 22.
Don't remind me. Stop it.
I know. Well, we only have a year and a half left.
Stop, quit being the accurate one on the group, all right?
How can I not be? It's too easy.
It's a pretty low standard this morning.
You look at when Trump left office. He left office December 31st, 2020. So it's been 2.5 years.
There's your brain going again.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
It's too early. I've only had one cup of coffee. Okay, so go ahead.
In the environment, this is with a B. Because we always think they
billion.
Environment, yeah. With a B.
Environment with a B. Okay. Environment.
Yeah, environment. Trump invested $38 billion. That's with a B.
With a B.
$38 billion in clean water infrastructure. The reason why he did it, he was worried about low-income housing and children that were not receiving proper water, and that it was lead-based water. So he invested $38 billion.
Oh, that must have been up there in the Northeast there. And where was that, Wisconsin or something?
Yeah. Under the Trump's presidency, America had the largest decline in carbon emissions of any country on Earth.
So he was causing global warming is what you're saying?
No.
Oh.
He withdrew from the Paris Climate Accord and was able to go ahead and do things in the U.S. that needed to be done and not have his hands tied by the world nations.
Oh, so, to cause more global warming.
Yeah. So 2019, lowest carbon emissions of any country on Earth. Led the world in greenhouse gas emissions, having cut energy-related CO2 emissions by 12%. While the rest of the world increased by 24%.
Yep.
No one knows this.
Well, see, 24 is bigger. See? So that they did better.
Unbelievable. I mean, think about this. I mean, people don't know this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's like China. If you want, I don't have anything against India, per se, but China and India are the biggest polluters in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, when would this have been? About 7 years ago, no, almost 8 years ago, I went to Nepal, so very near, I could tell the pollution.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's big. I mean, Nepal's up high. That's about anywhere from 10 to 15,000 feet.
And they use kilometers there, Tuck.
Okay. In between India and China, up in the Himalayas.
And I flew through Guangzhou, China, and I didn't leave the airport, but I could see from the airport that it was
the mess. It was,
You could see. I could see the air.
Well, it's like the water in the southeast. You know, I mean, the oceans and lakes and stuff like that. Unless you go to a place that's been very money spent to keep it clean, you know, there's just so much refuse in the water.
But again, we forget what Trump did in the environment. He went against China and actually put tariffs on China.
Right.
He made them come clean on a number of issues.
Including the virus.
And I mean, just amazing what this guy did. And yet no one reports it, so we're reporting it today, straight from a little garage right here in Silverton, Oregon.
There we go.
Hey, what do you got, Aaron?
So this document, I don't know if it's the same document that you're looking at, But this one is comes straight out of the archives.gov, so TrumpWhiteHouse.archives.gov. Mm-hmm. It's a document called Trump Administration Accomplishments. And for curiosity, I went to go print the thing just to kind of see how many pages it was. 51 pages. So it's, wow. You know, one or two accomplishments. Anyway.
Just one or two, yeah.
1 or 2,000 maybe, I don't know. Okay, unprecedented economic boom. Before the China virus invaded our shores, we built the world's most prosperous economy. So here's a couple of points in that. America gained 7 million new jobs, more than three times government experts' projections.
Wow.
Middle class family income increased nearly $6,000.
We felt that.
Yeah. And we felt that all of it go away recently sometime. I don't know why. unemployment rate reached 3.5%, the lowest in half a century.
Hmm.
Achieved 40 months in a row, 40 months in a row, with more job openings than job hirings.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. More Americans reporting being unemployed than ever before. Wait, no, employed. Sorry. Used to saying unemployed. More Americans reported being employed than ever before. Nearly 160 million.
Wow. You know, there's another thing that has been terrible by the church. There's many times that people are saying, well, he's not a religious man. You know, he did something.
I got hundreds of Bibles.
You know, but I'll tell you what, he did more to preserve religious freedom than any president in history. He was the first president to convene a meeting at the UN to stop religious persecution. The first. And if you remember during the Obama administration, we were having close to 800,000 yearly deaths against Christians around the world. 800,000. He put a stop to this. He stopped the beheadings. He stopped all of those things. He allowed the consciousness of doctors, nurses, and teachers and to actually have a decision-making process. If something was against their religious conviction, they couldn't do that. And that was proven in the Little Sisters of the Poor, which was a wonderful court proceeding.
Yeah.
He established the White House Faith and Opportunity Initiative. He stopped the Johnson Amendment, which interfered with the pastor's right to speak their minds. Remember, pastors?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So he allowed them to speak their mind. Unbelievable. He reduced even the burdensome barriers to allow Native Americans to keep significant eagle feathers on their tribal lands. So it wasn't just for Christians. He even helped those who were not Christians.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And he took action for federal employees to observe religious holidays. That means all of you Hebrew people out there who want to go ahead and keep Sukkot, Passover, owe it all to Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He put that in there so you could take those religious days off.
But see, here's the thing. Federal employees, they take all of them off anyway. So, right.
I know, right?
<It's> like, especially federal bankers. I mean, if you're a banker and a federal employee, I mean, do you ever work at that point?
Well, you know, we have some interesting things coming up. We're at the bottom of the hour. We have a guest coming on with us. Dr. Richard Ruling is going to be joining with us again. He's a wonderful person that deals with some biblical prophecies that are just amazing. And after we talk with Richard, we're going to come back and give you some of these highlights about President Trump. He's been getting a bad rap lately, and we just thought it'd be important to just speak good rather than speak evil.
Why do you think he's getting a bad rap?
What do you think?
He can't get the rhythm and the rapping. It's just, you know.
I think it's because it's more and more likely that he will run.
We will lift you up.
Yep.
Through the shadow of death to the light.
Hebrew Nation.
Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the Nations.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the wise guys, and whoa, we got a fourth wise guy coming to you this morning. We're pretty excited to have him back on with us.
I'd even go with a wiser guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, he's definitely older than us, right? Maybe that makes him wiser.
Well, he's far more educated than I am, too. So.
Educated. I know, right? Dr. Richard Ruling is with us, and he's an author of many books, and he's a speaker on a lot of different topics. Most of you might know him in his topics of health, also his topics of prophecy. And he's been quite the fluid writer. Do you have some of his books pulled up there?
I do have some of them. The Fall of Jerusalem 2023.
Wow.
Megaquake 2023. So it seems like something's coming.
You think so?
America is gone.
Yeah.
the earthquake and seven seals, the destruction of Jerusalem, some of the prophecy ones, and then there are a couple others on the health side as well. And so,
interesting.
Well, more than a couple, but.
Yeah. Good morning, Dr. Richard. How are you?
Hey, it's great to be with you. It's a real privilege. I appreciate your ministry and what you're doing, and good to be a small part of it today with things that I think will be of interest to share, specifically the latest book, Megaquake 2023. So want to get into it, but I don't want to crowd you guys out. So tell me any urgent question, and then we can deal with why a megaquake.
No, that's where we kind of want to go. What inspired you to write Megaquake, and why is this an important book for people to pick up?
And why do I have to move out of Oregon?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The discovery to me is that the earthquake is encoded four different ways in the book of Revelation besides stating it plainly as an earthquake before the seven trumpets. In Revelation 8:5, there's an earthquake. Then the seven angels with the seven trumpets prepare to sound. But if you go a couple more chapters, there's a lion's roar before the seven thunders. And that is the earthquake encoded as a lion's roar. And it occurs, you mentioned the book, The Destruction of Jerusalem. We get there when that happens, actually, when Muslims, in Zechariah 14, it says that nations will be gathered against Jerusalem to battle, houses rifled, women ravished, half the city goes into captivity. And, well, we might wonder how they would ever dare to do that, but that's really the, vision at the time of the end in Daniel 8, 17. Says the vision at the time of the end. It's a goat and ram. The ram's horns are Medes and Persians, but today that's Iraq and Iran. And it's half fulfilled with Saddam gone out of Iraq, but Iran will be next. It's not China. It's not Russia. It's not something else. It is Iran. And when they do what I just read from Zechariah, or quoted from it, the Muslims will be celebrating their mosque, which has an inscription, Allah has no son. When suddenly, Joel 3:16, the Lord will roar from Jerusalem, the heavens and earth will shake. Okay, that's one big earthquake if the heavens are going to shake with it. Okay, and that initiates, in fact, the context of Zechariah 14 is the day of the Lord. And that's what we need to understand better, in my opinion, because many preachers think that's when he comes in the sky. But the book of Joel has more references to Day of the Lord than any other book, five of them, but no second coming that I can see. And so I believe it's the end time, seven-year period, when people are going to run toward God or away from him. It's no more Laodicea, lukewarm, in between. It's make your choice. This is a crisis, and our destiny is determined by our choices then.
But isn't that happening even now? I mean, but evidently you're thinking it's going to be more of an event that makes it happen, because I'm seeing people right now getting off the fence. They're seeing the differences between evil and good. What are you seeing? Do you think it's not just a way of thinking, but an event?
I think that it includes, I think that coming events cast their shadow before, and there are some people making choices now that are good, etc. But when Muslims take Jerusalem, it will be a time of judgment for those Jews and for the Muslims. Most of the Jews in Israel have no interest in their spiritual heritage. They're just there for free land. But the day of the Lord, it says in Isaiah 13, is going to come with sudden destruction and lay the land desolate and destroy the sinners out of it. And I believe that that's 13 verses 6 and 9. And in Isaiah 2, 21 says he's going to, this is day of the Lord context in verse 12, but verse 21 says he will shake the earth terribly. And that's, to me, one single act is going to start sorting everybody in terms of what they're going to do and go. God will remain, and the scientists can say, well, we don't know, we don't believe it's God, but blah, blah, blah. But, well, it happens at a prophetic time, and they might as well admit that they don't know when the earthquake is coming in San Andreas, but God won't do anything without revealing it. And so that Psalm 90, verse 12 says, teach us to number our days, and we have less than a year, in my opinion.
So you're thinking this is a worldwide quake rather than just an isolated quake. And the reason why I'm thinking like this is we're seeing all the governments of the world aligning themselves up with similar thinking. Australia, Israel, Canada, U.S., Britain, they're all coming together in a unified approach on their approach towards people, their opinion towards people, environment, etc. And so you think it needs to be a whole world shakeup?
Well, what we're moving toward, though not obviously seen, is a new world order, global government with a pope in charge. And that's not God's plan. That is the new world order, or UN, is the image beast of Revelation 13. Early reformers and all saw the first beast in Revelation 13 as the papacy, and it was a sea beast. It came out of the sea, but sea represents peoples, multitudes, nations, tongues. So the old world papacy was rose among those that area, but then comes a land beast opposite, and that is America. The lamb-like beast with no crowns on the horns represent a church without a pope and a government without a king. You know, this is America. And it caused fire to come down from heaven. That was Hiroshima, Nagasaki. And it causes the world to make an image to the previous beast. And the image is UN New World Order. One way to rule everybody. And it will compel people just like the papacy did. You can't buy or sell without it. And the woman, ultimately, the harlot in Revelation 17, is riding that beast. The Vatican sits on the city of seven, is the city of seven hills in Revelation 17. And those clues, with whom the kings of the earth commit fornication, involved with politics and so on, that's where we are. And I believe that when God shakes the heavens and earth, even the Vatican will get destroyed. And the Pope will use that as an excuse or good reason to move to the Holy Land. And he will, it says in the last verses of Daniel 11, that he will plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas in the glorious Holy Mountain. So he will introduce Jesus to the world. Jesus, as in 2 Thessalonians 2, the false Jesus, Satan himself, will personate Christ at the end time.
Wow. Why do you think this is heading towards 23? Are you basing this off of different times and seasons that you're seeing it, or are you basing it mostly off of what's currently happening?
Both. And let me give you just a couple word pictures. First of all, Day of the Lord is really an extension of Night of the Lord. Night of the Lord is found in Exodus 12, verse 42, Passover night in Egypt. when God God said, "I will execute judgment," and He's going to do it again in the end time. Night of the Lord is only once in the Bible, but Day of the Lord is 23 times in the Bible, and I think it'll be 23 times bigger. It'll be worldwide, you know. And a time of judgment and crisis, and specifically, God punished Egypt for enslaving Israel and throwing their babies in the river. But America has enslaved most people in alcohol, tobacco, negative lifestyles, and has thrown 63 million babies in the trash. We are worse than Egypt, and we are. And it was a jubilee event when God delivered Israel, delivered slaves from freedom. But jubilee came 50 years, and 50 years from Roe v. Wade is next year. 1973 to 2023. So that's one of the timelines.
That's interesting.
There are other timelines as well. I believe Christ gave some specific signs that we haven't recognized well. When you say current events, yes. 2015 was loaded with a half a dozen signs. Joel 2:31, the sun will be darkened, moon turned to blood before the day of the Lord, and the word before, panim, means face or facing the day of the Lord, end times, in other words. It's not something that happened centuries ago. And then when they say peace and safety, sudden destruction comes. That was the Iran nuclear deal. Christ said, when you see an abomination standing where it ought not, and most Christians would admit that Leviticus 18:22, sleeping mankind with mankind, is an abomination. And that was had standing where it ought not in the Supreme Court. Should not be standing there. Okay. And also, the Pope, standing in Congress, he ought not to be there. This country has had freedom of worship without the Pope telling us what to do and how to do it. If he's so smart, why can't he go to South America and do it? You know, all these people want to come up here. Not good. Let him do his own thing somewhere else.
It's true.
Dr. Rulin, I really wish that you would, like, you know, express your opinions and just kind of throw them out there and just kind of let us know how you feel about some of this stuff.
Well, I do sometimes, but thank you for the opportunity. So, anyway, I believe that 2015 was a landmark, because of Christ saying, when you see these things, woe to them with child, woe to them that give suck. It wouldn't be fair for the end time to begin the next year. It takes years to get pregnant, to have a baby, to nurse it, to wean it, and so on. Actually, preschool children are a burden to mom, okay? So about 7 years, Joseph gave 7-year warning to Pharaoh, and then there was 7 good years of plenty, but 7 of famine. And my point is that I believe this is the 7th year we're in right now, and next year comes the troubles. From 2015. Yeah.
Okay.
So those were not meaningless signs. They mean something. And what is it they mean? It says that I like Ecclesiastes 3:15 in the New English Bible says, what is to come has been already. God summons each event back in its turn. And this is Joseph. It was a big event when Joseph said that. 12 chapters of Genesis ended with Israel coming down into Egypt because of that famine, and then 12 chapters to get them out of Egypt in Exodus. So 24 chapters focused around 7 good years and 7 bad. And if all the great events and solemn transactions are repeating themselves, according to my favorite author, we're seeing something of significance right now. We just seeing through a glass darkly, but I believe we need to get the Bible out as the book for understanding. And thank you for the opportunity to explain a little of it. There are other timelines. I think one more real quick one for 2023. Abraham Lincoln, favorite president, issued an Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, okay? And Joel 1 says, you tell your children, let them tell their children, them another generation. It's 4 generations, really, and 4 generations of insects, cankerworm, palmer worm, locust, and caterpillar. What each insect eats and leaves, the next one eats. Until the caterpillar eats it all, there's nothing left. And my point is that Lincoln's Declaration or Emancipation Proclamation gave freedom to slaves and to black people. Everybody's equal. Racial prejudice is on the rise. People are acting hatred. And I believe when the earthquake comes, there'll be martial law, the end of freedom, and big trouble, racial, civil war, whatever, is because the four generations, I forgot to say this, in the Bible, a generation is 40 years. In Hebrews 3, 9 and 10, God bore the rebellious generation 40 years. So 4 times 40 is 160. From 1863, it's 2023, next year. So that's huge. I happen to be a former SDA, Seventh-day Adventist. I'm not trying to get anybody to join that church. They have good diet and good ideas, but they've made a lot of mistakes. And the point is that they also founded in 1863, and I think it's over for them, basically, as a time of judgment. It says judgment begins at the house of God, and I think they've done it. They're copying the Jewish nation of old rather than seeing Yeshua as the Messiah, etc. I mean, that's what the Jews did. And go ahead.
When I'm hearing you talk about this on a timeline, I'm not questioning your research there, but I just want your opinion. Many times we look at things from the Gregorian calendar dates rather than looking at the dates of the Bible. And as we know, end of September is the end of the Shemitah year. And we also have the end of Sukkot in October. And then we have a new year. And I want your opinion on this because, as we go through October into November, we can see the amount of hatred and vehement government overreach that's happening right now with Trump as they try to take this man out. And they can't afford to lose this election that's coming up in November. And I'm wondering if 2023 actually begins earlier, according to more of a Hebrew sort of calendar, which would be the fall of this year after Sukkot, or even at the end of the
year. A good question, and really Exodus 12 verse 2 has the answer in my opinion. When God is talking to Moses, he said, this is the beginning of the month, the first month of the year, and in the next verse it says, take a lamb and separate it. It was about Passover. Spring is the beginning of the religious year. Mm-hmm. The secular year is juxtaposed 6 months later, and that's what the Jews call it now, based on Talmud or other things, the beginning of New Year. But really, it was Rosh Hashanah was the seventh month of the year, you know, in Leviticus 23. So I appreciate the good question. And there's another important reason why I believe that it's not the beginning of this fall for 23. And that is that as the days of Noah, the flood came with Passover timing, but in the second spring month, because Noah had contact with a dead body. It was a 9/11 warning. In Numbers 9, verse 10 and 11, if you have contact with a dead body or you're in a journey afar off, you keep Passover a month later. Mm-hmm. And Noah buried Methuselah, whose name meant, when he dies, it will come.
Yeah.
And he died as a sign the flood was coming, and there was a month delay before the flood. Well, I believe, interestingly enough, that the major events in Bible times had death associated with the Passover at the time of the flood. The whole world was going to die, okay, just about. At Egypt, it was the firstborn of Egypt that died because they didn't accept the blood on the doorpost, okay. And I believe watching and prayer on Passover, it will spare us, those believers who will watch and pray. There are three texts that promise protection from watching or from the thief. The goodman, if he'd have known, would have watched, not suffered his house to be broken. Okay. And interestingly, in the King James, the only place where we find goodman is Proverbs 7, 19 and 20. The goodman's on a long journey. He's taken a bag of money. He won't be back till the full moon. Well, the full moon is Passover, and the long journey is second Passover, you know, from the words of Christ, etc. So that is, in my opinion, those texts link together to support second Passover. I think that the Muslims take the city of Jerusalem at first Passover, like Titus came at Passover, and that's a time of judgment for the Jews. But for those who understand Yeshua and what he said and how it's going to be, like a far journey, Look out for second Passover when he's going to roar from Jerusalem. The heavens and earth will shake, and we should be watching, I believe, on the eve of May 5 next year. That's the eve of second Passover. It's a Friday night. Who's going to complain that you don't have to work the next day? You know, why not watch and pray? After taking the communion, the Lord's Supper, that's the imagery of Luke 12:37. 36 and 37. If he blessed is that those servants whom his Lord finds watching, he will gird himself, make them sit down to eat, and serve them. Well, that's what he did at the Last Supper. And we can have maybe a personal interview with a heavenly messenger. I don't exactly know how it's going to turn out. I haven't had any dreams or visions, but I'm looking at Scripture, and it all fits together very well, I think.
Wow. You know, I'm thinking about this with all your other books that you write on health. How do we keep our health during all this stressful time?
Well, that's a good question. And really, Christ said, when asked about the end of the world, to study the book of Daniel. And in the first chapter, Daniel opted out of government health care. You know,
they did.
The kings might meat and wine and dainties. What Colin Campbell came back after his China study and summarized nutrition in four words. Plant-based whole foods, not refined sugars, not refined starches, not refined oils and greases, but just eat nuts and avocados, things that have some high in fat. They have the essential oils in them, but a handful of nuts is plenty. A half an avocado, I let my wife have the other half, et cetera, you know, is all the fat you need. I once ate with a doctor who was running a health thing, and for breakfast I stayed the night with him before, and he said, I eat two walnuts every morning for my essential oils.
His
perspective.
Yeah. I can't eat just two. I got at least a handful of walnuts.
Well, if you have the shells on them, they're a handful just to have two. And if you crack and eat them, it's a protection against excess. We buy everything in a peanut butter jar, and we go overdo it. But if you have to crack the nuts before you eat them, a couple is fine.
Peanut butter jar. You ever just eaten out of a peanut butter jar, Aaron? Don't answer that.
Oh, I was going to answer. My answer was a three-letter word.
Yeah.
Eat.
Hey.
Well, I want to give you, while we're at it, let me give you a confirmatory sign or two that we didn't quite get to, and that is, as the days of Noah, contact with a dead body. And yes. Bill Gates said there's a worse pandemic coming this fall than next. Yes. Last, okay? And
it's
so
called
I believe
it's food.
Yeah. Well, and it's also for those people who took the shot and didn't know that it was bad for their immune system. And I believe that lots of people are going to die as the days of Noah and from a shot that they shouldn't have taken because their system won't handle it now. And I just say pray, ask if you made it by mistake, ask God to forgive you and try to go on plant-based and search natural remedies. There are things that some people are touting as beneficial. I don't know. I haven't had COVID myself. But I just say I would be very serious about it if I had the shot because it's, I think, big trouble for the immune system.
It is. Dr. Henry Elay, which we've interviewed a number of times, he was the professor at Arizona State. He's also a doctor in what's similar to what you do, which is health. And they're finding huge success on a water fast for 3 days straight, and then coming back in, it cleanses the body out. The body's able to take out what they're dealing with, and actually do better after that shot.
I think that would be good, and I had a similar experience when I was working emergency room one night and I caught the flu. Scratchy throat, runny nose, achy, felt cold, and I checked my temperature. It was normal. They taught us in medical school that viruses are killed with fever. And here I am, a sitting duck, no fever. What can I do? I took a break, filled a tub with very hot water, hot as I could stand, and in 20 minutes I had a fever of 102.5. And as the water was running out, I poured cold water. It actually felt refreshing and good, but a contrast hot and cold will also double the white blood count.
Yep.
Twice as many white cells circulating after that. And I did not eat any supper. I fasted because I wanted those white cells hungry. The flu comes after holidays, Christmas cookies, cakes, candies, all that stuff.
Yum.
Cut that out. and fasting 3 days and water and so on, and do the hot and cold, I think that would be powerful. Take some vitamin C maybe, or and some other echinacea and other herbal stimulants for the immune system, and that's what I would do, basically. Well, thank you for bringing it up.
No, it's good. We have about a minute left before the break. Where do you want to take us, and do you have time after the break?
Okay, well, I want to give a couple confirmatory signs. I mentioned that lots of people are going to die, and I don't believe the year starts this fall. I'm going to see that as a sign of contact with dead bodies, it will go
through
the winter.
Hang on for a minute. We'll be right back.
Let you go. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001, 503-967-3001. His kingdom, his people, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the wise guys, and we have a fourth wise guy with us this morning that's just been rocking our world. His name is Dr. Richard Ruling, and he's been talking to us about...
Speaking of rocking the world.
Yeah, right? You know, just before the break, he was giving us some points of some key aspects of why this is coming up to 2023, and I know he has to go here shortly, but we didn't want to cut him short, so... Doctor, just before the break, you had some key points that were in reference to the 2023 mark. So if you can just bring us up to date, sir.
Well, I realize that I did not fulfill what I intended on giving four reasons of how the earthquake is encoded in Revelation. I mentioned one as the lion's roar, and I want to mention another one at least now. The Revelation 3:20 says, I stand at the door and knock, and most Christians think that's General Jesus always knocking. But that church were lukewarm with materialism ended in an earthquake around 63 A.D., and I believe it's type and antitype. And the only other place where Christ, Yeshua, knocks in the New Testament is Luke 12:36, that when he comes from the wedding and knocks, we're to open immediately. And blessed are those servants whom his Lord finds watching. He ultimately, the promise is he will make us ruler over all that he has. And since my name was Ruling, I really wanted to understand that passage, but it's not just about me. It's about, I believe, 144,000 people that will be his initial bride of Christ, so to speak. And it says in Revelation 14:4, the 144,000 are virgins. They have to be the wise virgins to get in to the wedding. And the next time we get together, we'll look at the wedding parables, maybe the wedding messages from the Bible. But I want to encourage people to maybe, in the meantime, get a copy of my book. It's free today on Amazon Kindle, okay, if you've got a Kindle. And if you don't have a Kindle, download their app, because you can buy all of their books for cheap without postage or paper and, you know, all that business, you know. So
what's the name of that book?
Megaquake 2023, and my name, if they're looking for the author, is Richard Ruling, spelled with an H, R-U-H-L-I-N-G, Richard Ruling. Megaquake 2023, they can get it free, and they'll be better prepared and understanding, and my email's in there. And by the way, it ends with a link to a high-value DVD or a video that they can see online. Dr. Esselstein of the Cleveland Clinic is telling how you can reverse most disease by eating well. And so it's worth thousands of dollars if you have diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Instead of prescription drugs and all the adverse events that can happen to you, watch the video that is linked at the back of my book. especially the digital copy on Kindle.
Wonderful. Is there anything else you want to share with us before you have to go, Doctor?
Oh, I love you, folk. God bless you, and I hope your listeners support you better. We all need to do better. It's more blessed to give than receive, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to give and share. And I look forward to next time when it comes. God bless you.
Shalom, you, Dr. Richard. Have a great day.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. A lot of information to digest, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking that was an hour show with 30 minutes.
I know. Well, you know, the thing is, there's a lot of different opinions towards prophecy, and with the Wise Guys show, we like to bring on different guests that have different viewpoints, and
but what's been
interesting to study?
Yeah, and what's been interesting about that is over the last few years. We'll call them the COVID years.
Yeah.
Or the COVID decade, I mean.
Yeah, right.
That's what it feels like. Anybody we brought on that's kind of talked prophecy, the window of all the people is opening.
Yeah.
They're
all saying 23 to 30.
Yeah.
They're all in there.
It's really interesting. Now, we could all be way off by a decade or a century, but it is interesting how all of this seems to be pointing closer and closer to the current times. I mean, I've mentioned before my dad, who's 75-ish, you know, he actually grew up in the Adventist Church as well, just like Dr. Ruling did here.
Mm-hmm.
But he remembers having those conversations all of his life. Oh, it's closed. God's coming soon. God's coming soon. But, you know, I mean, the Adventist Church thought that too before they were the Adventist Church. Well, God's coming in 1844.
Almost all churches, yeah.
And so it's interesting, though, that we actually have scripture that seems to be lining up with actual events today.
Well, I don't know about you, but one of the things that kept popping into my mind when we were listening to him is this alignment of the world governments.
Mm-hmm.
That's never been seen before.
Right.
I mean, we've seen governments act independently, and now it's like they're wanting to think with one mind.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's what, I mean, the not the origin, but similar to an origin, is Israel being recreated in 1948, 1947. That had to happen before these prophecies began to really fulfill themselves, and that has happened. And now, with all the nations of the planet aligning themselves from a negative perspective,
he's trying to at this point, yeah.
And that's, you know, things are finally coming together as far as Yeshua's final judgment, the beginnings of, and as that happens more and more, we're going to know more and more.
So with all this information coming at you guys, and how does one prepare themselves mentally, physically, spiritually for these times?
Donuts.
Donuts.
Well, that's one way. And I go for donuts, but it's the process of what you believe, the faith that you have, is being comfortable with what you have. Even in the face of all these trials that are coming forth on us, if you know Yeshua, if you know the Master, you are in a good place.
Mm-hmm.
It may be indeed scary, and things are happening around you that don't necessarily bode well for us, but by the same token, you are on the Master's team, and you believe in Yeshua, and you pray to the Father all the time through His Son, and that's what's important. And so long as that's being taken care of, all the rest will, you know, be all right.
Right.
It won't be pleasant per se, but if you allow it to be scary, well, then you allowed it to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's, in case anyone wants to read some of Yeshua's words, I mean,
I doubt that's the case.
Yeah, it's throughout Scripture. You not only are things found in the prophets, but you'll find lots of references, okay? But if you always look at Matthew 23, Matthew 24, those are big areas where Yeshua makes a lot of descriptions about what's happening at the end of days. He talks about his second coming. He talks about the fig tree. He talks about Noah's days and like it being in the days of Noah. The master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and an hour when he does not know, and shall cut him in pieces. That it, he even gives a parable. And then he goes into the 10 virgins and the talents. I find it fascinating that after he gives the description of the end of days,
mm-hmm.
and it being a terrible time, that he gets into the virgins, the 10 virgins, some that keep oil and some who don't.
Right.
And then he also goes into the talents. And to me, the talents is really strange because, well, let me just read it here to you. We're in chapter 25 of Matthew, and we're going to be starting in verse 14. 25 verse 14. And I'm wondering, you know, because if Yeshua is given this discourse on the end of days, I mean, it's easy to see the 10 virgins, you know, some are ready, some aren't.
Right. And he was a masterful speaker and teacher. He wouldn't just, like most of us, just wander with our speech and, oh, well, this thought and this thought over here and then this thought here. It was very well planned out, and everything was connected. You had to say this thing first and then this thing next to get to this thing over here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all connected. So it's not just we're having this thought and that one. It's a continuous thought.
It's a continuous thought.
And Roland?
Yeah.
For people that don't know, and there are people that don't know listening to us, that, you know, define talents. Talents is not something that you're skilled at. Talents is a form of money.
Yeah, it is.
A type of money.
Yeah, which seems strange to me that if we're at the end of days and he's given this discourse, like I said, I can understand him talking about the virgins, okay? There's five that prepare, five who fall asleep. I mean...
Right, because there's going to be people that are prepared in the end and people that are not prepared in the end.
And that's what's interesting, is that, and again, define that better, is that it's not that they're asleep, but they're not paying attention.
See, yeah. Just not awake.
You know, they can be awake. They can be doing all the stuff, but they're not prepared. They don't have their ducks in a row, per se. And that's, you know, well, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus, you know. What else do I have to do?
Yeah.
Well, study and show yourself approved.
And I love the approved thing, because I think that's what it gets to here with this talent text. Okay. So... let's just read it,
yeah.
Okay, and then find out. So Matthew 25, for be on the alert then, for you do not know the day or the hour. That's in verse 13 mm-hmm. of chapter 25.
Now, how literal do we take that? I mean, because we just had Richard Ruling on here saying this year, the specific year that he's saying, well, that's a long period of time. It's not a day or it's not an hour.
Yeah.
Is he saying we don't know, you know, the exact time of, you know, March 5 at 12:05 p.m.? Or is it just saying, or is it a reference to, you guys are going to know anything, guys, at all?
He doesn't say it right here, but we know from readings that we've done that he does give the season.
Right.
He shows us the season, so we know we're in the general time frame.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you're at a point in time to where you need to be paying attention, because all of a sudden more and more specific clues will show up.
Yeah.
Well, let's help you out with that one just to show that Tuck's right. We'll go to 1 Thessalonians 5, okay? For you yourselves know full well that the day of the Lord will come just like the thief in the night. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Everyone uses this.
Right.
Okay.
Because we don't know when somebody's going to break into our house.
Right.
That's why we have locks on our doors and cameras and alarm systems mm-hmm. these days.
So while they're saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly, like the birth pangs upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But, and I always like it when Scripture does this.
Yeah.
But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that the day should overtake you like a thief.
So stop there. It's not in darkness, which means it's in the light. We can see it.
Yes. You know that it's coming.
Yes. So if you're standing at home in the daytime and a thief's coming to your house, you're going to see the thief coming to your house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So he goes on, for you are all sons of light and sons of day. and we are not night nor darkness. So then, let us not sleep, or not be awake.
Not be awake, be prepared, right.
Okay, let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and sober. So be, hello,
yeah,
awake. So let's go back to this Matthew one, because it says the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
After he says, be on alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour. But it says be alert, and in 1 Thessalonians says be sober. For it is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. Now,
so he knows he's going to go on this journey, and he's making preparations to be gone on this journey because he has responsibilities that need to be done while he's gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to me, this is like Yeshua telling his disciples, I'm mm-hmm. going to go away.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to entrust you with some things to do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what he did.
Okay.
All right. So here we are. Verse 15. And to one he gave 5 talents. To another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. Stop.
Okay. Some days I think my ability is 1. Some days I think my ability is 5. But that's my opinion. Yahweh knows best what my ability actually is.
Okay.
Right? and so I may get 1 or might get 5.
I'm thinking that if I was really smart investor, I would probably get 5. If mm-hmm. I was a beginner, I'd get 1.
Probably. Because based on our experience.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so off he goes. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents. Now, isn't that amazing that that word is used? Immediately.
Immediately.
Right? Immediately the one who's received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents.
Because he obviously knew what he was doing.
He did. What a smart boy, man.
And he's like, I got to do this quick because maybe I can do it again.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because he knows the system. Okay.
He knows the system. In the same manner, the one who'd received 2 talents gained 2 more.
Perfect.
He's doing pretty good. He's
yeah.
decent in high school.
He's had the same percentage of performance as the first guy.
Yeah.
He doubled him. Did
pretty well. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. So we know right now that this is a money situation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people might think, well, money for what? Is it for the money for the gospel? Is it money for good works? Is it money for money? But let's see what happens. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Okay, so it's been a while since Yeshua has left, about mm-hmm. 2,000 years. It's going to be a long time. He's going to come on back and you're going to settle accounts. And the one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I've gained 5 more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You're faithful with the few things I put in your charge, and of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.
So, A+.
A+. I give you A+. The one who also who had received the 2 talents came and said, Master, you entrusted to me 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You are faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.
A+.
A+. Okay, so here comes this other one.
The way you said that didn't sound good.
No, and the one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you were a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid. And went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours.
This is what I kept for you, and it's coming back at you.
Which I can certainly see where somebody who doesn't have the skill in money management
think you did good.
Hey, I didn't lose it. I didn't want you gave it to me. I didn't lose your thing. I did a good job.
What does this tell us? Hang on, we aren't quite to the end yet. So, Mr. Tuck, verse 26. But his master answered and said to him, "You wicked, lazy slave." Here's those nice words again.
The mean tweets.
The mean tweets. "You wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest."
At least, right?
Yeah.
"Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the ten. For to everyone who shall more be given, and he shall have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. And cast out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, into that place. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." But, here's that word again.
But.
And this is why we know this is an end of time of prophecy parable. "But when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne, and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats."
Wow.
So the guy that we were talking about who said, "Hey, I know that you are a, I can't remember the word he used.
Tough guy.
And so I didn't want to lose your talent that you gave me.
Yeah.
So I hid it. And he's thinking he did a good thing by not losing it.
Yeah, he did.
Thought he did a good thing by not losing it. And the guy comes in and says, "Hey, you're wicked. You didn't follow how I live my life. You haven't been paying attention to how I conduct my business. You even said that I go out and just sow everywhere, knowing that some of it goes away. Why didn't you just try and go and do that?"
Here's a text that kind of goes along with what you're thinking. It's a question.
Okay.
"Could the problem be the servant's view of the master?"
Oh, yeah.
The servant got what he sowed, at least in his own thoughts.
Well, he got nothing.
Whoever puts his, and in Proverbs they give this, "Whoever puts his trust in money will fall like the autumn leaves. But those who put their trust in God will be like green leaves on a healthy branch." That's Proverbs 11:28. So notice that the guy who hid the talent loved money so much that he didn't want to lose it.
He wasn't going to lose it. He was too afraid to lose. Ooh, yeah. Afraid. Ooh,
yeah,
interesting
afraid.
Word.
And so the one who invested actually did the works of the Messiah as the Messiah's coming.
Right.
And that's interesting. You just said it because he did the works of the Messiah.
Yeah.
To where that's what Yeshua, when he called you worthless and lazy servant, he wasn't a servant, wasn't watching him, wasn't paying attention to him, because that's for us to be studying the Word of God and studying Yeshua is learning his character.
Yeah.
And he's a doer. He's always doing. And if we're just coasting, we're not doing. We're
right.
Coasting. We're being lazy. And he wants us to be active in our faith. And so.
But he's even saying active in your money, your investments.
And I know. That's what I mean. Everything.
Yeah.
And so that I have a question for us to think about, ponder. Verse 31 of Matthew 25. "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all his angels with him, then he will sit upon the throne of his glory." You said his glorious throne.
Yeah, he will sit upon his glorious throne.
Totally different perspective in this translation.
Throne of his glory versus...
Throne of his glory. See, what he's sitting upon is his glory.
Uh-huh.
And his glory is his throne.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not... You're not sitting on a glorious throne. You're sitting on the throne of his glory.
Yeah.
And I know it's, you know, apples and oranges or whatever type thing, but it's something to consider and look in the Hebrew. Go back to, I know this is Matthew, it's the New Testament, but there is Shem Tov, you know, the Hebraic Matthew. And so to look, go to that point and see if how that translates, how it comes across. Does it represent it as his glory? Or is it a glorious throne?
Well, either way, what it does for me is there's a bigger kingdom, and it's not here on earth.
Right.
And so if the throne is glorious, or there's glory on the throne, or if he makes the throne glorious, it's all about him, and it's about his kingdom. When I think about that, I'm going, okay, where is my glory being spent when it comes to this money? Because for some reason, see, our first question, how do we prepare for this end of time that's coming? And he gives this parable, of all parables.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he could have given a number of other parables, but he talks about money, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, what's up with that? I think it has to do with fear.
Listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations.
Oh, we're having some good stuff
coming up. At the break, we are trying to figure out. Here, Yeshua, the Messiah, is giving these parables, right? It's all about the end of days. And you would think it'd be like, what, stocking up food or how to prepare, you know. Really,
how many guns?
Yeah, like really specific, right? Or telling us who the bad guys are and who the good guys are.
All right.
But he doesn't.
Who's the battle belong to?
Yeah.
No, that's the question I'm asking you.
Not me.
And not you. Not to Aaron. It belongs to the Lord.
Yeah.
So, granted, he may have us carry a firearm for specific purposes, but our salvation does not depend upon the fact of me carrying a firearm, whether it be a rifle or a pistol. He's going to take care of the battle stuff.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer why would he give a parable of talents at the end of the
day? Because he wants us to understand obedience to him and value, not money, value.
Value what? Who do you value, Aaron?
Well, Yahweh, of course, that's an easy one to start with. But I mean, there's a list of people that I will put some value in as people to model my life after,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. how they live their life. But it's really hard for me to put that kind of value into humans anymore.
But I mean, these investors, like the first two.
Yeah.
They must have known their master pretty well
mm-hmm.
to take a risk.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Master's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to take some money, and I'm going to reinvest it. So rather than keeping it safe for him, because typically most people might do it, I'm going to take care of the estate.
I'm not going to pass off my $5 to Steve down the street, who's living on the street down the street.
Right.
I'm going to take my $5. And I'm going to give it to my financial investor who's been doing that for 30 years.
Okay. So we're at least...
And then watch him lose it in the market.
Yeah. But, you know, it can happen. I mean,
right.
All of us have seen that. I thought I was being conservative in my investment plans, and yet under Biden, I've lost 45%. Just like that in a year and a half.
Oh, that's all?
Yeah. I mean, we're thinking, wow, what if that would have happened to one of these guys? Well,
right.
Thanks, Master. You came back, and I invested the $5, and I lost 50%.
Yeah.
What do you think he would have said to him? I'm curious.
My question back to all of us is that Yeshua presents this situation to us. we're given an option. Sit on it or do something with it. He doesn't say just leave it be. He wants us to do something with it. All right, do something means, for me, it means taking a risk.
Right.
What's the benefit health-wise of taking a risk? Anything?
Doing something with your money, your value, whatever. Whatever that is you're terming here of this value thing, is if you do nothing with it, it's worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to do something. This just occurred to me that we are to be doers of the word,
mm-hmm.
spreading the word. We have the word. We've been studying it for years. What are we doing with the word? Have we invested that money? Have we invested that value? And by investing that value, what does that mean? Does that mean putting it in a bank? Does that mean going down the street and talking to my neighbor?
Hmm.
You know?
If many times we think about protecting the estate that we have rather than doing what you just mentioned, we have... say the gospel has to be spread. And if we look at the early church, and maybe that's where we should be going,
mm-hmm.
in the book of Acts, the early church was constantly thinking about investment towards the gospel being sent out. And if that's the greater kingdom, then that's where our focus should be, because our time here on earth is small.
Notice the words are up here. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You're faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things."
Mm-hmm.
He not only did that with the guy with five, but he did it with the two. All right?
Because they both acted upon what they were given.
Okay, so he's looking for us to actually show ourselves approved rather than just banking on just protecting something.
Yeah, I believe in you, Yeshua. And you're doing nothing. You know, you can believe in the word, sure enough, but if you don't do anything with the word, and I'm guilty of this.
See, all three of these individuals saw that the master was taking risks and getting rewards,
uh-huh.
right? Because the third one even said, he's the one who kind of says, "Hey, we see what you do.
Right.
You know, you do all the sowing, even where it's not going to produce."
So that's how they knew him.
And so that's how all three of these guys, and so that's why the first two are like, "Well, this is what the master does, so I'm going to do the same thing."
Oh, so he copied it. Yeah.
And then the other one's like, "I'm not going to lose it. I mean, because he throws it away, and I'm not going to be the guy that's going to throw his money away, so I'm going to make sure we keep it and safe. Yeah. So I'm going to hide it, and we'll keep it safe, and I'll just give it back to him and say, you can do what you need to with it." And the guy gets thrown out because
From
he didn't do.
Ron, is that if we're believers in the master, and he gives us this value to invest and to turn it around, turn it over, he wants us to trust him.
So
if
what is
we
that?
Don't trust him, he's not going to act upon it.
So what does that tell us to do? What does that tell us to do at the end of days? Because this is an end of day prophecy. So what does it tell us to do?
Not go run and hide in the cave. Go out and do. Talk to people. You know, spread the word.
Keep going.
Yes.
Rather than running in fear.
Yeah. I mean, because in my opinion, I'm not comfortable with the concept of the end of time, end of days.
Yeah.
But I'm comfortable with who I am. I like the people that I know,
uh-huh.
the people I associate with, and I'm not overly concerned. I'm not too scared, per se,
mm-hmm.
of these end times, what's taking place, because Yeshua is the master, and he's got a plan.
Right.
So you're just going to keep going.
Exactly.
Just keep on peddling it.
I like it. Again, I think that brings us back here to the end of days is, as we're starting to see things lay out practically for us. I know we've brought on a lot of guest speakers talking about Isaiah and Zechariah and Deuteronomy, but what's actually playing out right now? And why should we be concerned about what's going on? I talked to a couple people, and they said, "I'm so tired of politics anymore. I don't want to hear it."
Yeah.
I don't want to vote. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And they become like, I think, this third person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They hide.
Right.
And they're going, don't, no. You know, but I'm looking at some of these track records. Just 2 years ago, basically, we had a government that had turned some things around. And I just want to...
And being active about trying to improve.
Yeah. So look at what happened here. I'm just going to throw some of these things out. An executive order was signed by President Trump to make it clear that the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act applied even against Israel. So he was trying to root out anti-Semitism. He launched a centralized website to educate the public about hate crimes and reporting them. Signed the Stop School Violence Act. Launched the Foster Youth to Independent Initiative. That's helping kids that were in the foster care.
Okay.
Which had never been done before. Created the first ever White House position on combating human trafficking. No other president has tried to stop human trafficking. Trump was the only one.
Wow.
The religious freedom is just mind-boggling to where he was supporting the idea that people could have religious thought and not be arrested.
You know, and that's what's interesting is that he had to go and do that. And the reason he had to go and do that was because it was being attacked, even with the First Amendment. That is supposed to have been given us that. But so many things have come against the First Amendment, and so some would say unconstitutional. He has to come out and say, guys, no, I'm going to sign another thing here that says we can't be doing that stuff against religion.
Yeah. Look at this other one. He had tax cuts and job act that expanded school choice for parents. This actually happened. Most people don't know this. They're so angry at it. He allows parents to use up to $10,000 from a 529 educational savings account to cover their K-12 tuition costs. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Launched a new pro-American lesson plan for students called the 1776 Commission because we were constantly knocking down America. Wow. I mean, these are some good things. He took things for technical education, spent more than $1.3 billion each year to states developing a workforce development for students in technical ed.
Trade schools.
Did you ever hear of trade schools? Yeah. No one's ever talked about that.
Mike Rowe did.
Shoot. He signed the Inspire Act.
Which one is Inspire?
Inspire, which encouraged NASA to hire more women and girls to participate in careers in aerospace, because women usually don't go into aerospace.
Okay.
So he put money aside for that. This is amazing. He put in an educational grant called Every Student Succeed Act for kids to have access to funds off of good scholarly work.
Nice. I mean, that's a pretty impressive list for a horrible human being.
You think? And even for these Christian churches saying, he's so mean, he's doing mean tweets. Really? Look at what this guy put in. Do you know that he prioritized support for the African American people in the college system?
Yeah, but he was a racist.
Yeah. Moved the federal historically black colleges and universities initiatives back to the White House. It had been sent out before under Obama.
The black president, you mean?
Yeah. Signed into law the Future Act, making permanent $255 million in annual funding for historically black colleges. Never been done before. Signed legislation that included $100 million for scholarships to African American students.
Obama did that.
No.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
big meanie?
Yeah, oh, I know. Yeah.
To me, it sounds like this is a guy that's using his talent.
Yeah.
And I think churches and Hebrews, I'm talking to all of you out there, cut it out. Start thinking about, you know.
So what that he says something that offends somebody?
So did Messiah.
You think? Didn't you read a couple there earlier? You hypocrites. Apply that as you may.
Whitewash
tombs. Apply that as you may.
But I think it's important as the end of days wrap, as they come around. I almost said wrap up, huh?
I'm going with Tuck. We need to proceed forward as if tomorrow is another day and it's a positive day.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to reinvest. We're going to move forward to the kingdom work. And I'm thinking to myself, when it comes to politics, all I care about is, are the politics happening that support the spread of the gospel? If it supports the spread of the gospel, then that's the person I vote for.
Mm-hmm.
I could care less if he drinks too much. I could care less if he does something else, maybe has some other human deficiency. Okay? But if he's spreading the gospel and allowing the gospel to be spread, he allows churches to speak,
mm-hmm.
so be it.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the teller for me is that if I'm perfect, well, then I can hold people to that standard that they need to be perfect.
Mm.
As long as Trump, Mr. Trump, or whoever it is in office, if they're doing well, if they're doing good, so long as I'm not perfect, I can't call them on anything.
Right?
You know,
we can call out that some of their behaviors are not appropriate.
If we have good ideas, present the good ideas.
Yeah. Right.
Get off your duff and promote something.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just say, oh, that guy's a meanie.
Yeah.
You know?
But why not call Biden a meanie? I mean, when you hear all the things he said against the MAGA people, supposedly, as being degenerates, 75 million of them.
I'm surprised that he can pronounce the word properly.
I know, right? So the idea here is, you know, we want to get back to the scriptures, and the end of day here is that I think we're being called to make decisions. I think Richard Ruling said it well. There's a time coming, and it's already happening, that we get off the fence and we either promote good or we promote evil.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's not an either or. There's not a medium place. You have to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, we could use your help at Hebrew Nation Radio. Do you know, I think we announced this last week, we've passed over 1 million-some hits on people that come into our website.
1.2 million.
1.2.
That's a few people.
That's a few. And we have, on a regular basis, those of you that are listening, close to anywhere between 38 and 40,000 that listen on a regular basis.
That's more than a handful.
It's not bad.
The
problem is, no one's giving.
That's a problem.
That's a problem. And we need to stay on the air because we have a 1.2 million that are at least checking us out.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, we've put up on our site a little $3 giving button. Okay, so it's on the website.
That's not even a coffee.
No, it's not. It's $3. Come on, man. Yeah, $3. $3.
How many of you are going to Starbucks, stop it, go to Dutch Bros, and having a coffee?
I know, right?
Give up one Dutch Bros coffee and all of the Starbucks coffees.
Please do. It would be so appreciated. And we can keep things going here for a little while longer, which would be really cool. We have some great teachers on there. Michael Clayton, which is a favorite of Tuck's.
Yeah.
He does the Torah Roundtable and Living Torah. Does a fabulous job. He's excited about all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we have other people on that really make your day. Some young people. We interviewed PD.
PD, yeah. Speaking of young guys.
Weston Houston, you know, who talks about the spirit. He's only like 27, 28, right?
26, 27.
Yeah, somewhere in there, yeah. Just shy of 30 somewhere. I can't remember exactly.
Young. You know, and so he's on there. And Joe Amon, another young guy all the way over in, Louisiana. Linda Watson, our famous historian.
I was going to say, don't forget the ladies. There's some really good ladies on there.
Alyssa Allwine.
Oh,
Our doctorate in historical studies and archaeology. And, man, she's... She's intense. If you want to be blessed,
and hear some wonderful things from her, it's
really is he intense now or just as a coat?
Yeah, it's just always good.
Well, we're not certain that she could be in a cabin. Doesn't have to be in a tent.
Oh, you mean intense? Huh? Yeah.
You know, and our famous newsman Mark Call,
yeah,
who is not bashful about his words.
No,
you know what I love about. He always calls the Department of Justice. He always says, the Department of Just Us.
Of Just Us, yeah.
I mean, he coined that to be very famous.
I thought you were going to go with the Department of Injustice.
Well, it is kind of about just them, just us.
Yes.
You know, let's, I want to go back here to Matthew again.
I was going to ask, when are you going to have your show?
Oh. Well, we do that with the wise guys.
No, but your show. I mean, when you go and teach. And
we have a lot of people pushing that on me, and I think I've already come up with a name, but I'm not going to say it yet. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, we need to think about. And the other thing I want to encourage all of you is start thinking about. I know this gift and talent thing in Matthew is strictly, you know, talked about money, but. Yeah.
What there's a whole different and Tuck was touching on it, a different connection with the money. Money is just an object that we use to be able to pass this value as Tuck was using back and forth, right? So how do we get the vehicle? We put in some time. We put in effort. We put in knowledge. Mm-hmm. And we get this currency, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we use this currency to exchange it for other things, other stuff, whether it be food, whether it be a car, house, whatever. And so it's the stuff that we do. It's our time. And so it's also a representation of our time.
Yeah, because time's worth money.
Exactly. And so when Yeshua tells us, go out and do your time as I have done my time, follow my model. And so that's what we should also be doing.
And what's his model? What was his model?
Investing into people and spreading the message of, you know, salvation.
Mm-hmm. Salvation is just around the corner. It takes a brave soul to actually say, hey, are you saved?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was on a bike ride with one of my dear friends.
Yeah.
He's just fabulous.
Just a hill climber friend?
Yeah, right.
And we were downtown Salem, and we were biking.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd come across this lady near the riverfront.
Okay.
Okay.
And she looked like she was in pain. She was holding her arm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I see that being a CPR person.
Right. You're going to pick up on it.
Boom. We pulled right over. Bam. Are you doing okay? You know, oh, yeah, I'm doing okay. I have a tumor inside of my arm.
It's not the tumor.
And it's really acting up. And so I went through some questions with her about heart attack symptoms, and no, she says, I'm feeling fine, I just need to rest, this happens a lot. So she gave me her past history, so I felt comfortable. But my friend looks at her and says, you know, just in case this goes wrong, he says, are you saved? Can you believe, I mean, he just, are you saved? Have you decided to follow the one and only King? That's what he says to her.
Well,
she smiles from ear to ear. Yes, I have. And I believe in the living King.
Fantastic.
I know, right? Do we do that?
Not often enough.
Yeah.
I was so proud of him. I was going, wow, man, way to go. You know?
So we felt good.
We stayed there with a little bit, and then we ended up leaving. But what a calling.
Yeah.
And it could happen at the smallest, at what we think is just, yeah, I'm thinking pay attention.
Right.
And see who's around you.
So, and obviously he's done that before, because if it was that easy for him just to come right out and do it, he's got the practice in it. You know, the first time you go and do it, it's going to be hard. One of the things I do now, whenever I see, you know, a soldier or somebody that's got, you know, a Vietnam hat on or anything like that, I go up and I say, thank you for your service. When I first started doing that, man, the nerves I had and just the nervousness, oh, man. But now it's just like, because I've been doing it for so long, it's just a natural thing. And my eye now sees these people.
Super.
And so just go right up and talk to them. So practice. Just start doing it. It's going to be hard, but just start into it.
Hello?